Chapter 5. Three letters and two goodbyes. Æthelflæd looked at her nails, sad to see that there was nothing left to bite. How long has she been waiting? She closed her eyes and hummed the tune one more time. Æthelflæd Jones! All eyes swiveled in their sockets as she stood up and walked along the corridor. This final audition was behind closed doors. The slam of the door behind her sounded like a nail in the coffin. She breathed out. What are you going to sing us, Miss Jones? They were the same six faces as the last audition. You're here to sing, aren't you? The lady asked again, seeing no reaction from the skinny girl. Sam Cooke, replied Æthelflæd. A change is going to come. The examiner nodded, and Æthelflæd glanced at the sound assistant. She waited for the cinematic introduction, breathed deep, and then gave the first line all that she had. I was born by the river, immediately softening the tone for the second. In a little town, and just like the river, I've been running ever since. She closed her eyes and put into the lyrics all the longing she was feeling. There were no warbles or flourishes. Æthelflæd did not use the song to show off her voice, but rather used her voice to express the song. She stuck to Sam Cooke's version, just changing some of the lyrics to adapt them to her experience, and sang from the heart. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change is going to come. Oh yes, it will. She felt the pause when the music died and opened her eyes. The lady at the centre of the table was nodding approvingly, but the middle-aged man next to her frowned slightly. What do you know about this song, Æthelflæd? It was used as a hymn for the American Civil Rights Movement in the 60s. Cooke only sang it once in front of a live audience. And why have you chosen this song? Because I identify with it. You identify with the Civil Rights Movement? Do you think that's appropriate? Æthelflæd blinked. Her reply was slow. I think it's appropriate to identify with as many people as possible, in the same way I'd like the others to identify with me. The man opened his mouth to answer when his colleague broke into the conversation. It was very heartfelt, very moving piece. You sang it with a lot of depth and warmth. You'll find out the decision we've made in the next week or 10 days, okay? Thank you for the opportunity, Æthelflæd nodded. She turned and left the room. I don't think I've ever sang a better song, Æthelflæd told her father that evening. But I don't want to be too optimistic. It would be too disappointing to be let down. You've done all that you can, and knowing you, if you feel upbeat about it, then I'm sure you sang wonderfully, her father answered. Whatever happens now is out of your hands. Just feel proud you've done your best. The weeks had flown past. Natalia was so busy in the restaurant that Æthelflæd had hardly seen her. Samantha and Dean and their parents had taken their boat and sailed across the channel to Belgium and Holland. Æthelflæd had been invited, and she would have loved to go abroad for the first time. But what with Moonzip and the audition, she had made the decision to stay behind. Natalia was going to sail with them, but she pulled out at the last minute. Æthelflæd didn't know why. Moonzip had really settled in. He spent a lot of time with Æthelstan, hanging out with his friends in the park. They spent the rainy days playing video games in the lounge. Moonzip's accent started to soften a bit, and he stopped speaking as if he was a gangster. On the other hand, Æthelstan was beginning to pick up some American words and phrases, which his father disapproved of. Æthelstan enjoyed the American's company. The time he spent with Moonzip took a load off Æthelflæd's hands, and she was grateful to her brother. She promised herself to get her brother a present with her earnings. One way or another, Æthelflæd had a clear idea of where she was heading. The apple-picking season was just beginning, and even if she was not accepted for the Canterbury School of Performing Arts, she would spend the next 6 or 7 weeks working in the orchards around Davingstock, as she had the year before. That Friday she would be free for the first time since the start of the summer. Moonzip was flying back to California, where his mum was going to pick him up and take him to a boarding school. With each day he grew more sullen and more withdrawn. He was beginning to spend all his time lying on Æthelflæd's bed in the company of Squeaky, Heidi and Budgie, without saying a word. Athelflaed tried to talk to him, but it was difficult when she herself did not know what to say to make him feel better. Athelflaed had one thing on her mind that she had not been able to sort out in the last few weeks: Dean. She had seen him a few times at the start of the month when they cycled out daily to the nearest beach with Samantha, Moonzip and other friends. But he had never tried to restart the conversation, although Athelflaed had kept as close to him as she could without making her intentions obvious. Or at least, that is what she liked to think. But Dean had said nothing. In fact, he sometimes reminded Athelflaed of Moonzip, sulky, uncommunicative and dejected. She noticed that Ayan stopped coming after the first 2 days. Had the two boys fallen out? What was up with him? She supposed she had just had to wait and see, which is what she did all week. What with the decision from the CSPA, Moonzip and her friend's absence, she spent each day waiting. With her father at work, she kept herself busy doing the dishes, making the beds, doing the washing up, cooking and doing the laundry, while trying to get Athelstan to take care of Moonzip. A couple of afternoons she took the Rockstar's son and they cycled out of Davingstock and away from the coast, through the orchards, asking fruit farmers about apple or pear picking jobs in case she was rejected. She spoke to lots of people and was given the thumbs up by almost all of them. She soon realised that the best way to earn money quickly was hop picking. They were long, gruelling 12-hour shifts with just one day off a week, but Athelflaed had decided there was no going back. If she was not accepted by the CSPA, she would earn her future in another way. She was not going to spend another year twiddling her thumbs, and she needed a backup plan just in case. And so Friday arrived. Athelflaed walked up to the monastery, this time not to pick Moonzip up, but to see him off. It was the last time. Athelstan did not want to go. He had already said goodbye and did not want to draw it out. Athelflaed was surprised to find herself in a poignant mood, thinking she would not see the little rascal again. Despite herself, she had grown fond of him. "I want to thank you for what you've done," Norman told her. "I appreciate it." Moonzip was in the back of the car. He hadn't said anything since Athelflaed arrived, nor even looked in her direction. "Don't mention it, Norman," she answered. "It was my job, after all." Moonzip showed no sign of noticing Athelflaed. "But you gave him just what he needed. He needed attention, but without being spoilt. He needed to hang out with normal, everyday people. I know how hard it is to put up with him sometimes, but I don't think anyone has done a better job than you, ever. You've been a godsend, Athelflaed. I'm very grateful." Athelflaed did not know what to say and kept quiet. Norman mistook this and felt the need to excuse himself. "You must think I'm not a good father, Athelflaed, and in a sense you'd be right. I'm just not as full of beans as I used to be. But I've got the kid's best interest at heart. I worry about him, you know." He passed her an envelope. "Here's your bonus. You've earned it." "Thanks a lot." She quickly slipped it into her back pocket. "He'll be okay. Kids go through stages, but it'll all come out in the wash. He's a good lad, really." "Feel free to pop around whenever you want." The Rockstar eased himself into the driving seat, closed the door and turned down the window. "And keep me up to date with your musical career. You've got a lot of potential." "Will do." The window slid down again and Norman put the car into gear. Athelflaed waved at Moonzip through the glass, but he made a point of ignoring her. "Moonzip," warned his father, but the boy turned his head away. Athelflaed stayed on the pavement as the car slipped down the hill and out of sight. She felt empty. Not even a smile. Good job Athelstan hadn't come, she thought. He would have been mortified. "Little brat," she said aloud, in order to break the spell. It didn't make her feel much better, so she decided to adapt a Ray Charles song as she walked back home. "Kid, oh kid, don't treat me so mean. You're the meanest critter that I've ever seen. Hit the road, Jack, and don't you come back no more, no more." She was much more cheerful by the time she got back to the square. She decided to use some of her earnings to order herself a pot of tea and scones with jam and cream. She needed some time to ponder. She thought of the money in her pocket. She thought of Norman, world-weary and jaded. She thought of her own father with his simple life, so wise and so serene. She compared Moonzip and Athelstan and understood why Norman had said how lucky she and her brother were with their cramped little house and simple lives. She thought of her cat Squeaky, who had been brought back by a neighbour, shaking with terror, his back leg cut off by a high-speed train. He was laid in his basket, and there he stayed for days, being looked after and fed, until they decided he did not need to be put down. Now he seemed to spend each day extracting the last drop of pleasure from every ray of sunshine, every moment of attention, every time he lay out in the garden. An example for all of us, she thought, as she sipped her tea. Athelflaed began to realise the advantages of being the town dimwit. No expectations, no pressure. She didn't have to live up to anybody's ideals, and she could choose her own path. She felt sorry for Moonzip, she felt sorry for Norman, and she felt sorry for Samantha. Her friend had set her aim so high and had to shoulder so much expectation that she felt she could not afford to let anybody down. Besides, imagine living with the most gorgeous boy and not being able to. Having a brother like that would be just too cruel. It was almost lunchtime by the time she got home, and her father was waiting for her, waving three envelopes. Special delivery, all three! He wasn't working that morning and had stayed at home to cook and do the chores. I think I need a tea before I open them, replied Athelflaed. She sat at the table as her father busied himself with the kettle and teapot. She was feeling composed, relaxed even. She could not have done more, and the waiting was over. Even though she had prepared a backup plan in case of rejection, she felt quietly confident that she would be accepted. Superstitiously, she placed Squeaky on her lap, opened Budgie's cage, and offered him the three options. He pecked at the biggest cardboard envelope, so Athelflaed sipped her tea, opened it, and with two fingers took out a piece of paper. There was something else, but she did not look inside to see what was enclosed. The letter was from Moonzip. Dear Ethel, I just want to say that I loved staying with you and I hope I can come back soon. I really liked playing with Stan and with being with Heidi and Budgie and Squeaky. Thanks a lot for looking after me and cooking me all that delicious stuff. I looked around for a present and I saw this and I'm sure you'll love it. I chose it, not Pop. They sent it to me from the States. It's just a little present to say thank you for being with me. I'm going to miss you all so much. Love, Mooney. Athelflaed folded the paper, opened it and read again. She lowered her head and passed the letter to her father wordlessly. Then he sighed and turned the envelope over. A vinyl record fell out. Athelflaed looked at it, stunned. Her father did not notice. Well, that's really nice, isn't it? His bark was worse than his bites. You could tell that from the start, although he was a handful at times. I suppose his dad made him write the letter, but you can see what he means, what he says. Athelflaed didn't hear a word. She was staring at the record in her hands, open-mouthed. It was an original copy of A Change Is Gonna Come, signed by Sam Cooke himself. She had never seen anything so beautiful. Apart from Squeaky and Heidi when they were babies, she quickly added to herself, and maybe Dean too and Budgie, but as a physical, inanimate object, this was more precious than a diamond. It was a rare collector's item, and it was hers. Her dad stopped talking and looked. He took it from her hands, turned it over and whistled. Well, that's a lot more than just a thought. You're going to have to send him a message to show your appreciation. Athelflaed did not reply. She was cradling her head in her hands. She had called him a brat and a critter. She winced and pulled at a tuft of hair before quietly taking the two smaller envelopes and showing them to Budgie. He nibbled one and she opened it. It was a letter from Norman. Dear Athelflaed, I suppose that by the time you've got this letter, I must have already told you how grateful I am for the way you have taken care of Moonzip all summer. But I preferred to write you this letter rather than telling you face to face. I'm sure you wouldn't know what to say, and it'll save us both from an embarrassing situation where you feel you have to thank me, and I have to tell you not to worry, and all that. I've spoken to the CSPA, and I've let them know that if they decide to accept you, I'll take care of the tuition fees. If they're stupid enough to turn you down, the offer is open for other music schools or any type of training you want to carry on with. I've seen your love for music, your talent, and your commitment. It's made me look back and remember what it was like at the beginning. The struggle, the enthusiasm, those were the best days. I'd be happy to act as your musical godfather, as it were. Please don't feel obliged or think that you will owe me a favour. It's not like that, and I was also lucky enough to count on people that helped me. Make sure you keep in touch and let me know what decision the CSPA takes. Regards, Norman. It took a while for Æthelflæd to finish the letter, and by that time her father had read it over her shoulder. You can't accept that, Æthelflæd, that's too much. She was beginning to feel overwhelmed and had no idea what to say. I'll speak to him about it, she answered. She needed some time and space to think it over. Her father put her hand on her shoulder. It all depends on this last letter. Æthelflæd blew out her cheeks, cracked her knuckles, and tore the envelope open in one movement. She read as fast as she could. Heidi was already half a mile in front, chasing the ducks out of the reeds. Æthelflæd was back in the marshes, where it all begun, walking with her head down, looking sideways at the river. How much water had flowed by since she was last here, yet it looked no different than before. Her thoughts were slippery, with no firm ground to grip onto. She pictured Moonzip in his mansion in Beverly Hills, squeaky, with three legs, sunbathing on the windowsill. Thomas Beckett and Sam Cooke, centuries apart, both lying in a pool of blood. Natalia's parents, sweating and working their way forward in life. Dean and what he had not told her. So many reflections and currents were flowing together. Her first audition, singing Take Me to the River. Then a sudden image came to her mind, as clear as a photo. She saw herself with her parents in the meadow, by the side of a small trickling stream. Soon after her brother was born, Æthelflæd's mum and dad took them into the hills of Kent, to the source of the river where she now stood. She remembered her dad laying down a blanket in the sunshine and setting out the food. Her mum was lifting her brother up into the air and singing Bill Weather's Lovely Day. When the day ahead of me seems impossible to face, when someone else instead of me always seems to know the way, then I look at you and the world seems all right with me. Just one look at you and I know it's going to be a lovely day. It was one of Æthelflæd's earliest memories, maybe her first, but there were more. Some years after this, she remembered spending some long summer Sundays beside the same river, a soft and meandering stretch of water some miles further downstream. And it was here that she learnt to swim. Æthelflæd could not recall her mother there. She might have already gone. But she remembered the hard slap of water as she dived under. She saw her father with his book and flask of tea in the shade as he splashed water at her brother on the riverbank. Although it was a bright sunny day, she was shivering with the cold, though it did not bother her. Remembering all this, she felt a sudden stab of pain. Yet she did not want to retreat from her past, but rather hold on to it. She felt that there was something she needed, although she could not put her finger on it. She felt defeated. She stopped suddenly. There was no one around. The land and the sky were both empty, and she felt small in the landscape. She closed her eyes and began to sing. I was born by the river, and just like the river I've been running ever since. There have been times that I thought I couldn't last for long, but now I think I'm able to carry on. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change is going to come. So strange to think that this was the same river, miles upstream and years later. Back then she had had no doubts, no hesitation. Here the water was faster and darker, sweeping across the marshes and into the open arms of the sea.